You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the latest Times Higher Education issue review podcast for the edition covering the 20th to the 26th of June 2013. It's coming to you a little later than usual. We hope we kept you busy with our dedicated rankings podcast. If you've not heard that yet, it's online for your delectation right now. My name's Chris Parr. I'm joined today by writer Elizabeth Gibney, deputy news editor John Morgan and news editor Simon Baker. Regular listeners will be aware that we cover several of the big stories from the latest issue in this podcast. This edition is no different, and we'll be looking at this week's cover feature, which sees Lizzie report from Canada a year after Quebec's anti-fees protests to assess their gains and goals. John Morgan had this week's splash on the spending review latest and some of the areas where the biz budget might look a little bit vulnerable. We'll do a bit more on a spending review as well, since it's the issue of the moment. Lizzie also spoke to the Chancellor about the implications for the science budget, so we'll look at that a little bit too. But first things first, it is you, Lizzie. The cover feature this week, you spent a bit of time over in North America. What's your cover feature all about?
So yes, I had the pleasure of meeting an awful lot of people while I was over there in Montreal. So if you remember last year, around this time last year in fact, the streets of Montreal were packed with people. Mm. It started off as a student protest against a fee increase, which they all call a hike, but I'm sure here we probably wouldn't even see it, that we saw fees treble here. Theirs are going up 75% over 3 years. But they managed to get the whole population. It tapped into something about what was going on in terms of corruption and austerity, and they managed to get the whole population out on the streets pretty much. And after a few months there was an election, and actually the ruling party was ousted, and the new party came in, who's the Parti Québécois, and they got rid of the fees. So it's widely been seen as one of the few examples of a win for the students. They tried to increase the fees, it ended up with people out on the streets, the government was changed, and the fee hike didn't happen.
That's how you protest, isn't it? That's how you do it.
Well, yes, indeed. It's a very radical... It's seen as having quite a radical history, and it's got a number of very powerful left-leaning parties there, so they've had a lot of success where other people haven't. But the big question, really, of my piece was, what's the situation now? Is it really progress for them? Because there was a meeting a few months afterwards, once everything had calmed down, and the result of that was that they are still going to have a fee increase, but it's going to be much smaller. It's going to be indexed to living costs, so a rise of about 3% a year. And this is obviously not what the students necessarily wanted. A lot of them firmly believe in free education. And on top of that, because the government are trying to reduce their deficit quite quickly, there's going to be some quite severe cuts to universities as well, which are coming over the next couple of years. So the question really is, who won out of this? Students maybe didn't get as big a hike as they expected, but there still has been an increase. And on the flip side, some of the universities are feeling a bit of a hole in their budgets and feeling really like they're underfunded compared to their comparative universities elsewhere in Canada and the world. Although everyone argues about whether that's true as well. So there are many, many sides to this.
And is there an appetite for a repeat of last year's action? I mean, this 3% rise is far smaller, but they're clearly a very active and engaged student body. Is there an appetite to take to the streets again?
I think there could be in the future. I think the overwhelming sense that I got was people were pretty tired by this point. It had taken over a whole year of their life, pretty much. And we're certainly in a lull. However, there always is the potential for that to come back, and the government knows that, and the students know it. So they know that they have that power and they can mobilise, but these things do take years to plan. I think they first started talking about the protests and strikes in 2010, before it really, so it took a good 2 years before it properly came about. So that's the kind of scale that we're talking about, and if they wanted to do it again, we'd probably have the same kind of lead up.
What happened to people's courses? I mean, did the protest mean that they had to start some years all over again? I mean, because they effectively suspended some.
It all depends really on what university you're in and how flexible they were. A lot of the time, I don't think anyone's going to fail because they were on strike, because it is a right over there. But I think that some people have to do a huge amount of catch up in a short amount of time. Some universities actually just shifted the whole academic year so that they were able to accommodate students. Obviously, some universities universities were more sympathetic to their students' case and some weren't. So I think it did take a real toll on a lot of people's lives.
Yeah, it's a fantastically in-depth feature. Not often the Quebec flag makes the front page of a UK publication either. So do take a read. It's issues that really do have a knock-on effect for the rest of the higher education sector too. Maybe issues that do make the front page rather more frequently relate to the UK's budget, and particularly the UK's government spending. As we record this, there's a spending review due in approximately a week's time. John, you had the splash this week looking at, well, basically at the spending review latest and how it might impact the Department of Business, Innovation and Skills and therefore, you know, potentially universities.
Yeah, that's right. The spending review is coming on the 26th of June and it's now looking extremely likely at this point that the transfer of medical and education and research budgets to the Department of Health away from BIS is going to be a key part of the spending review for BIS. Lizzie revealed this news a few weeks ago that it was under consideration, but it now looks sort of set to be a major part of the savings that BIS are going to make.
That's about 800 million, isn't it?
Something yeah, like yeah. The idea is that if you transfer away these medical education research budgets from BIS, BIS will save about 875 million. For its spending review, savings of about 1.4 billion, that'd be the maximum. And because they're going within the Department of Health's budget, that's a protected department, so it won't have to make those cuts. But obviously, there's some fears over what would happen to those budgets if they sit within the Department of Health in future. And if you read between the lines of what David Willetts said in the Commons last week, he appeared to suggest that this transfer would be going ahead, in that he said we'll make sure the money's not used for other things, and if there's any change, the vital basic research that the MRC carries out is not jeopardised. So he was far from ruling it out.
It's certainly not denial, is it?
No, it's not. And Shabana Mahmood, who's Labour's Shadow Universities and Science Minister, told us that she had concerns that this was simply a box-ticking exercise to meet spending review diktats.
I suppose the problem is they're a long way down the road in with this plan, and they came up this early and decided this is one way we're going to meet a lot of the cut that we're going to have to make. You can't then suddenly go, even if some people are saying, please don't do this for this reason and another reason, then it's very difficult to suddenly go, all right, well, we'll look at a different plan and we'll suddenly have to find 900 million in cuts from somewhere.
That's so pretty hard alternative plan to come up with.
It does seem mad, isn't it? It's a one-year spending review, and it's actually a really quite a big decision if you're moving the MRC away from all the other research councils as well and from its very independent position at the moment. It does seem a little bit rash thing to be doing for to balance the books.
Yeah, that's a long-term strategic decision that you're making on the basis of
one year
meeting a very short-term target, isn't it?
Yeah, and of course the resources involved just in that move from between departments is going to cost money, and when you're trying to reach sort of savings targets, it seems strange to spend money doing something that's such a short-term fix. But yeah, that just certainly seems to be on the cards. Lizzie, you also spoke to the Chancellor George Osborne this week about the spending review implications for the science budget. Let's just very quickly hear a little bit from Mr. Osborne and what he had to say to you.
And you said that science is a personal priority for you, yet BIS is still going to have to make some cuts. In your opinion, is it worth cutting some of the other last remaining substantial parts of the higher education budget, like widening participation, for instance, in order to preserve science?
Well, look, the truth is Britain is running an 8% budget deficit, and we have to make difficult decisions in order to ensure that this country lives within its means. And that requires choices. And we made choices in spending review in 2010 and in the years subsequently. And those choices led to science being prioritised, science spending being prioritised, both capital and current spending. And as I say, I'm not going to announce the spending review today here, but I'll do it in the House of Commons on 26th of June. But my intentions, I think, have been pretty self-evident. I've said today that science is a personal priority for me, both for the short term and the long term for this country. And I think when you come to the Crick Institute and you see, you know, how exciting this is, and you see what a contribution this is going to make to our economy for decades to come, you can see that investment in science is worthwhile.
So yes, Mr. Osborne there speaking to Lizzie. Where were you speaking to him? What was the story behind that?
So this was at the topping out ceremony at the Francis Crick Institute in London. This was what I think the Treasury were calling their Science Day. So they'd obviously decided at this point, I don't know how much earlier they decided, but that they were going to prioritise science in the budget. And myself and a few other journalists were called very last minute down to the Francis Crick to talk to the Chancellor. And I think it was quite interesting because he obviously really had a point to push, that he was very keen on saying how this government had done well for science already and they'll continue to do so. But the question that I obviously put to him and that we all want to know is, well, what might be sacrificed for that? A lot of people have very successfully campaigned to preserve science, but we all know the biz budget is going to be cut, and as John's looked at what the effects of that might be, and it might be quite far-ranging. And also we had an interesting report out this week actually by the Science is Vital campaign, which was looking back at the previous spending review and how the fact that even though the science budget was frozen then, which was widely seen as a quite a good deal or at least better than expected, there have actually been quite a lot of damage has been done to science in the meantime, in terms of fewer grants, making it more difficult to hire staff and PhD students, and just making the UK less attractive. So maybe a freeze isn't enough. Maybe that message has got through and maybe they are going to boost the science budget. But what might be cut if that's the case? That's what we really want to know.
I think I probably should just stick up for our arts and humanities researchers at this point, and even social sciences as well, just because often the language that comes out of the Treasury and the government around this is always science, the science ring fence, protect science. Well, do they mean science or do they mean research in general? Because obviously there's a lot of arts and humanities research which has been part of the science ring fence, and we would hope that would continue. And they wouldn't draw a distinction on that, but often the kind of rhetoric that you hear from government is always about big science, and I think that's probably a bit unfair to some quite important research that takes place in other areas, really.
They certainly do seem to like these big projects with some kind of buy-in from private companies,
industry
yeah, exactly. or charities. They love the idea of leveraging money, and things like the Francis Crick are just wonderful. Going to be a huge iconical building and institute in London with lots of universities involved. Biomedical science, what the UK is great at, but I agree that's yeah. something the government seems to push and slightly relegate the
and what's the other thing that the UK is really successful at? Art and culture. So it's kind of it is a point that kind of seems to be, it's often made by arts and humanities researchers as well themselves, but I think it's important for the government really to kind of to make that point as well. I suppose it's the DCMS, it's a different department that deals with that, maybe that's possibly why.
Indeed, although all departments of course making savings, but the picture will become clearer in the next 7 days or so. Do keep your eye on timeshighereducation.co.uk, where we'll keep you up to date with any sort of breaking news. It's a slightly shorter issue review this week. Don't worry, we're not shortchanging you. As I already mentioned, there's a dedicated 100 under 50 rankings podcast already online for you. Later in the week, well, just early next week actually, Tuesday or Wednesday, we'll have a dedicated books review. Books editor Karen Shook will be talking with Jules Pretty about his review of The Sea Inside by Philip Hoare, which is this week's book of the week. Jules Pretty is, of course, Professor of Environment and Society at the University of Essex. Those books podcasts are always a great listen to. Do check the archive for the ones we've done in the past. But for now, that's the end of the issue review. You can follow us on Twitter as usual. Tonight we'll be reporting live from the Times Higher Education Leadership and Management Awards in London. Also find us on Google+, on LinkedIn and on Facebook, and of course timeshighereducation.co.uk. But until next week, that's the end of the issue review podcast.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.